All right, welcome back everyone to the deep dive. We've got a really fascinating case to dig into today, something that I think a lot of folks, especially as you're sort of thinking about your careers and the future of work, might not really think about too much, but that is actually super important.
Absolutely. And it's one of those areas of the law that, kind of flies under the radar until
Well,
it becomes relevant.
exactly. And then it's like, oh wow, okay, this is a big deal. So the case we're looking at is McDonald v. Mobile Coal Producing Inc. It's from 1991, and it comes out of the Wyoming Supreme Court. And it really gets at this question of, when you start a job, you usually get that employee handbook. Right?
Right.
And it's got all the company policies, maybe some nice language about, how they value their employees, fair treatment, all that good stuff. But then often there's this disclaimer in there somewhere saying, hey, this isn't actually a contract.
Right.
So the question becomes, can that handbook, even with that disclaimer, actually become something legally binding? Can it change that kind of default assumption of at-will employment that we have in so many places?
Yeah, and that's really the crux of the issue here, because I think, for a lot of people, and certainly for law students who are, thinking about their future careers, you kind of take for granted that employment is generally at will. You can leave a job whenever you want, and an employer can for the most part, let you go for pretty much any reason or even no reason at all, as long as it's not, an illegal reason.
Right, exactly.
But, what this case really explores is whether an employee handbook with its policies and promises and all that can actually create an exception to that kind of fundamental rule of at-will employment.
And what's so interesting is that, we have the actual crew documents here, the opinions, the arguments, all of that, along with a standard case brief that sort of summarizes everything. So we can really kind of dig into this from a couple of different angles.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, our goal today is really to help you understand, first of all, how the Wyoming Supreme Court kind of wrestled with this question.
Yep.
When can an employee handbook be seen as something more than just guidelines? And then what are the practical implications of this for both, future employers and for employees? What should people be looking for? And what are the key takeaways from this case?
So to really get into the nitty-gritty here, let's talk about Craig McDonald, right? That's the plaintiff in this case. So he starts working at a coal mine run by Mobil. And initially, it's, a pretty standard at-will employment situation, nothing out of the ordinary. But then he gets this employee handbook, right? And as we said, it's got these two kind of seemingly contradictory elements in it. On the one hand, it says this isn't a contract. It's got that disclaimer in there.
Right. And it's important to kind of point out that those disclaimers are fairly common in employee handbooks. It's the employer's way of saying, look, we're putting these policies out there, but we don't want to be, totally bound by them in every single situation.
Right.
Yeah.
So they're trying to protect themselves, give themselves some flexibility, all that. But then on the other hand, the handbook also goes into a lot of detail about specific company policies.
Right. And it's not just like, dress code and when to show up for work. I mean, they get into, disciplinary procedures, what happens if you're accused of wrongdoing or something like that.
Exactly. And even there was this whole thing about, Mobil really valuing open communication.
Right.
So you can see how someone reading this, they might be thinking, okay, on the one hand, they're saying this isn't a contract, but then on the other hand, they're laying out all these specific ways they're gonna treat me and these procedures, these promises, it's almost like, well, which is it?
Yeah, and I think that's a really common experience, and frankly, I think that's part of the reason this case is so important, because it really highlights, that tension that can exist in these situations.
Absolutely. So things get a little messy for McDonald because at some point there are these rumors circulating at work that he had harassed a female coworker.
Right.
And McDonald, he wants to clear his name, he wants to address this, and he remembers the handbook, right? He remembered that language about open communication. So he goes to his supervisor and he says, hey, look, these rumors are going around. I want to address this, I want to be transparent, let's talk about this.
Right. And you would think, based on the handbook, that the supervisor would be, receptive to that, right?
Yeah.
They seem to be emphasizing this culture of openness and communication and fairness.
Right. But that is not what happens.
No.
Instead, the supervisor basically tells McDonald, look, just ignore it, go back to work, don't worry about it. And McDonald's kind of like, well, wait a minute, you know, that's not really the open communication that you're talking about in the handbook. Right,
right, exactly. And this is where things start to really escalate.
Yeah, because the situation doesn't really improve. And ultimately, the supervisor gives McDonald an ultimatum. He says, look, you either resign right now or we're going to fire you.
Wow.
Yeah. So McDonald, faced with that choice, he ends up resigning.
Yeah.
But he's not happy about it. And he thinks back to the handbook, right? He's thinking, you know, they promised me this fair treatment. They promised me this open communication. And this is how they're treating me. This doesn't seem right.
Right. And you can see his point, right? I mean, he tried to follow their procedures. He tried to do what he thought they expected of him and got kind of backfired on him.
Yeah. So he decides to sue Mobile. And his argument, his core legal argument is that, look, despite that disclaimer in the handbook, it still created this implicit requirement for them to have a good reason to fire him.
Right, right.
They couldn't just get rid of him without cause, without, you know, actually following those procedures they outlined, especially after he tried to, you know, use that open communication policy.
So he's basically saying the handbook, even though it said it wasn't a contract, actually modified the terms of our employment relationship.
Exactly. Exactly. So this case goes to court, right? And initially, the trial court sides with Mobile.
Right.
They look at the handbook, they see that disclaimer, and they say, well, you know, it's pretty clear cut here. This was an at-will employment situation. The handbook wasn't a contract. Mobile could let him go for whatever reason. Case closed.
Right. And that's what's known as summary judgment. Right.
Right.
The court essentially saying, look, there's no genuine issue of material fact here. We don't even need to go to trial. We can just decide this based on the documents and the undisputed facts.
Right. But McDonald's not giving up. He appeals that decision. And this is where it gets really interesting, because the Wyoming Supreme Court actually reverses the trial court's ruling.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. They say, hold on a second. There are some factual disputes here that need to be resolved. It's not as simple as the trial court made it seem.
So they're basically saying there's enough of a question here that a jury should decide this.
Exactly. And you know, to really emphasize how important this issue was, Mobile actually requested a rehearing. They went back to the Supreme Court and said, look, please reconsider. You know, we think you got this wrong.
Right.
But the Wyoming Supreme Court, they stuck to their guns. They said, nope, we're not changing our minds. This needs to go back to a lower court. And these issues need to be, you know, really hashed out.
So they're saying this is a significant enough issue that it needs, you know, a full hearing. It needs to be properly considered.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's kind of unpack what those factual disputes were. You know, what were the key legal issues that the court was really grappling with?
Sure. Yeah.
And I think it boils down to two main questions, right? One is, did the handbook actually create a contract that required Mobile to have a good reason to fire McDonald? And two, was summary judgment even appropriate in this case?
Right. Right. And you know, I think to understand the court's reasoning, you have to kind of delve into this concept of an implied contract.
Right, right.
Because typically, you know, to have a legally binding contract, you need this clear, you know, offer, acceptance, consideration, all the elements of a formal contract.
Yeah.
But what the court's exploring here is whether the language in the handbook and the act of Mobile giving it to their employees could have created this sort of implied contract, even without all those formal elements.
Right, right. Okay. So it's not like a written agreement with signatures and all that, but it's more about, you know, did Mobile's actions and words create this reasonable expectation for the employee that, hey, you know, I'm not just going to be fired out of the blue. They have to have a good reason.
Right, exactly. And the court really zeroed in on the ambiguity in Mobile's handbook. You know, on the one hand, you've got that disclaimer saying this isn't a contract, but then you've also got these pretty detailed policies about, you know, how discipline is going to be handled, these commitments to open communication. And the court's saying, well, that creates a real question about the nature of the employment relationship.
Right. And they actually use this legal principle called objective contract theory, which I think is really fascinating.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's a fundamental principle in contract law.
Yeah.
And essentially what it means is that the court's not so much concerned with what Mobile subjectively intended in their minds when they created the handbook. What they're looking at is, what did Mobile do objectively? What actions did they take and what language did they use? And in this case, you know, they gave the handbook to their employees and they used language that seemed to promise certain things. So the question is, Could a reasonable person in McDonald's shoes, reading that handbook, have believed that his employment wasn't strictly at will?
Right, right. So it's not about, you know, what Mobile secretly thought the handbook meant. It's about how their actions and words would have appeared to a reasonable person, you know, in the employee's position.
Exactly. And the court is basically saying, you know, if Mobile didn't want to create these expectations, they needed to be a lot clearer about it.
And this is where the dissent comes in, right?
Right, right.
Because not everyone on the Wyoming Supreme Court agreed with this decision.
Yeah, and you know, the dissenting justices, they were pretty concerned about this ruling. They argued that, you know, if we start saying that employee handbooks can create these implied contracts, even with disclaimers, then it really undermines that whole concept of at-will employment.
Right.
Right.
You know, one of the dissenting justices even said that this decision strikes the death knell for at-will employment.
Wow, that's a pretty strong statement.
Yeah, they were really worried about the broader implications of this, you know, that it could lead to a lot more lawsuits,
yeah.
That it would make it harder for employers to, you know, manage their workforce.
So it's kind of this balancing act, right?
Right.
Between, you know, protecting the rights of employees to not be treated unfairly and also allowing employers to, you know, have some flexibility in running their businesses.
Yeah. And you know, the majority of the court, they acknowledged those concerns, but they ultimately said that the way Mobile handled this specific situation was just not right.
Right. And they actually focus on the disclaimer itself. They said, look, you know, this disclaimer wasn't prominent enough. It wasn't clear enough to really negate those other promises that were made in the handbook.
Right.
And they pointed out that, you know, it wasn't bolded. It wasn't in a larger font. McDonald didn't have to sign a separate acknowledgement specifically for the disclaimer. They said, you know, if you're going to have a disclaimer, it needs to be conspicuous. It needs to be obvious.
Right, right. So it can't just be buried in the fine print. You know, you got to make it really clear to the employee, hey, this is not a contract.
Exactly.
So we've got this kind of split on the court, right?
Right.
You know, you've got the majority that's really focused on this ambiguous handbook,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that Mobile's actions created this real factual dispute that a jury needed to sort out.
Right.
And then you've got one of the justices, Justice Macy, who wrote a concurring opinion. He agreed with the majority's outcome, but he kind of emphasized a slightly different legal principle called promissory estoppel.
Right, right. And
yeah.
And promissory estoppel is a really important concept in contract law.
Yeah, can you kind of break that down for us?
Sure. So promissory estoppel basically says that, you know, even if you don't have all the elements of a formal contract, if one party makes a promise and the other party relies on that promise and they're harmed as a result, the court can still enforce that promise, even if it wasn't technically part of a contract.
Right, right. So it's kind of like, you know, you made a promise, you led someone to believe something, and they acted on that belief, and now they've suffered a loss, so you're still responsible, even if it wasn't, you know, a formal contract.
Exactly, exactly. And Justice Macy was basically saying, look, you know, even if the handbook didn't technically create a contract, McDonald still might have a claim based on promissory estoppel because he relied on those promises of fair treatment and he was harmed as a result.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got the dissenting justices who really emphasized that disclaimer. And they argued that, you know, there wasn't this meeting of the minds, this mutual agreement to form a contract that changed the at-will nature of McDonald's employment.
Right, right. They felt very strongly that the disclaimer should have been enough to protect Mobile in this situation.
So why does all of this matter? You know, why is this case so important?
Well, I think it's important for both employers and employees, right? I mean, for employers, it's a really, really big reminder that those employee handbooks, you know, even though they might seem routine, they can have real legal consequences. If you're making promises about how you're going to treat your employees and you don't have a really clear, prominent disclaimer saying, hey, this isn't a contract, you could end up creating a legally binding obligation that you didn't intend to create.
Right. So it's really important for employers to be very careful about the language they use in those handbooks. Make those disclaimers very clear, very obvious.
Exactly. Exactly. And for employees, it's a reminder to really read those handbooks carefully. You know, don't just skim over them. Don't just assume they're meaningless.
Yeah.
Look for language that suggests, you know, something more than just at-will employment. Promises about how discipline is going to be handled, commitments to fair treatment, because those things might actually give you some legal rights.
Right. Right. And what's so interesting is that this case kind of establishes a sort of test that courts might use in these kinds of situations.
Right.
And it's a three-part test. First, did the employer make enforceable promises in the handbook? You know, promises that could reasonably be seen as creating something more than just at-will employment. Second, was the employee's reliance on those promises reasonable? You know, did they really believe that they had those rights and did they act accordingly? And third, is it necessary to enforce those promises to prevent some kind of injustice? You know, was the employee really wronged in this situation?
Yeah, and those are really important questions. And I think they highlight, you know, the complexity of this area of the law.
And I think this case also does a great job of illustrating some really key legal concepts. You know, we talked about objective contract theory, how it's not about what someone secretly intended, it's about what their actions and words conveyed.
Right.
And we talked about promissory estoppel, how even without a formal contract, a promise can still be legally binding if someone relied on it and was harmed.
Right. And it also highlights, you know, the importance of conspicuous disclaimers, like we were saying.
Right.
You know, if an employer really wants to maintain at-will employment, they need to make those disclaimers really stand out. Bold text, larger font, maybe even a separate acknowledgement that the employee has to sign.
And there's some really, really great quotes from this case that I think really drive home the point. One that really stuck with me was when the court was talking about how it would be unfair to allow employers to basically go back on promises that they made in a policy manual. They said, and this is a quote from another case, but they cited it, it would be unfair to allow an employer to distribute a policy manual that makes the workforce believe that certain promises have been made and then to allow the employer to renege on those promises.
Yeah, that's a really powerful statement. And you know, you can see how that really gets to the heart of what the court was concerned about in this case.
Right, right. And then, of course, you know, you've got the dissenting justices' really strong warning about this being the death knell for at-will employment, which, you know, maybe a bit dramatic.
Right. Right.
But it does show you how significant this decision was and how much potential it had to, you know, change the balance of power between employers and employees.
Yeah, absolutely.
So to sum it all up, you know, I think the big takeaway from McDonald v. Mobile Coal is that clarity is key. You know, whether you're drafting an employee handbook or reading one, pay close attention to the language. You know, are there promises being made about how employees will be treated? Is there a clear, conspicuous disclaimer saying that this isn't a contract? Because those things can really matter and they can have real legal consequences.
Yeah. And it really highlights the importance of, you know, being informed, understanding your rights, and really thinking critically about, you know, what those documents that you might get when you start a job actually mean.
And this case also makes you think about how, you know, the legal landscape is constantly evolving. Mm-hmm. You know, we're moving into this world of digital employee handbooks, online policy acknowledgments. And you know, I wonder how that's going to further complicate or maybe even clarify this whole issue of at-will employment.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. You know, do employees have a greater responsibility to really understand those digital documents, especially in light of cases like McDonald v. Mobile Coal? You know, it's definitely something for all of us to think about as we move forward.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap up this deep dive. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for having me.